a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Good morning, everyone. This is Senate Local Government, and I am Senator Holeen. I am taking the place of Senator Schleckaway today, who our thoughts and prayers are with. His wife last night gave him a call, and she started having contractions. So with any luck, everything is going well, and we should have some good news by the end of today. So while our job is on state business, our thoughts and prayers are with Senator Schleckaway and his wife. We call the meeting to local government to order. We greet all our listeners on the internet, and we welcome everyone here to testify and to listen to today's proceedings. Just a reminder from someone who has had to buy donuts, please turn off your cell phones. I will find you, and I will track you down. We have pages who are very good at that. With that said, Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Bradford.
Here.
Hunhoff.
Here.
Lederman. Nelson.
Here.
Teason.
Here.
Holeen.
Here.
Schleckaway is excused. And quorum present.
With a quorum present, we will move on to a motion for the approval of minutes. So moved by Senator Hunhoff.
Second.
Seconded by Senator Teason. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed, nay. With that said, the minutes will pass. Just a reminder, anyone here to testify on today's calendar, please sign in. And just to let you know what order we're going to go in, we are going to start off on Senate Bill 175. After a little bit of jumbling, we're going to stay on calendar and in order today. The only one that we are going to defer that we know is House Bill 1051. Both primes in the House and the Senate are gone today, and so we will defer that to another day. So with that said, first bill under consideration is Senate Bill 175. Any proponents to testify? Senator Adelstein, nice to see you this morning.
Good morning, Senator Holeen. This is the first time that I've had a chance to appear before you as chairman, so it's a pleasure, and I see it's a friendly, smiling committee. Good morning, good morning. The bill I bring to you today is in the soundest tradition of South Dakota. It's a bill that permits 95,000 people at the moment, and probably 110,000 before the next election, to vote in either party's primary. I've weighed whether I should share a partisan comment, but when I think back that it was an incident that occurred to me before any of you were born, in 1966, I was the young Republican, and I was young, and state chairman, as a matter of fact, I was the young Republican precinct coordinator in the finest, warmest, and at that time the second largest county in the state, still the second largest, and we had just completed a senatorial campaign. At that time, they were building Titan missiles in Pennington County and Custer County. And there were members of a very, very powerful union who, by the way, refused to give to allow any Native American workers on the project because they claimed that though they were journeymen on the union cards they had, they remember saying of one very good friend of mine, he said, "Chief, you're not qualified." And the man handed him his card again, and he said, "I've been working for 10 years. Chief, you're not qualified. You get the message?" Anyway, he helped, another long story. But so what that union had done is we had a very easy voting procedure. I'm going to get away with this without naming any names. And the sheriff and I, as a precinct coordinator, he came and we took pictures of members of this union, because at that time the law was that anyone could register on the day that they voted, and then if two other members certified to them. So there were a troop, people trooping around Pennington County voting in as many as four precincts on the basis that two people swore they were entitled. So I came to Pierre, and that's the point of the story, as a very young, idealistic person, but also very, very partisan in those days. And I came to Pierre, and I appeared before whatever committee, I think maybe even State Affairs. We wanted to tighten the law, eliminate this. And I still remember the chairman saying to me, and I can't remember who it was, once again, you were all either very young or not even born yet, and he said to me, "Mr. Adelstein, I want you to know, in South Dakota, we would rather that three people voted that we're not entitled to, rather than one would be denied the opportunity." And I've carried that tradition with me for a long time, and that's why I bring this bill to you today. Times have become complex. People are confused. There are issues that are raised in both parties that are sometimes similar, to my mind, mostly quite different. So individuals, especially younger individuals, those who really have all of the rest of their life at stake, want to participate in the primary of one or the other party because they're not quite sure that the partisan effort is for them. And this is not unheard of. As a matter of fact, the founding fathers deliberately tried to avoid the formation of parties. We even had presidents and vice presidents of different parties in the early days because they worried what they'd seen happen in parties in Europe, particularly in Great Britain. So as a consequence, while the party mechanism played a key role when communications were distant, when you had to write, you had to appear in the newspaper, or even send telegrams, in those days, the parties needed a mechanism to get their message across. Today, it's instantaneous with a tweet the moment someone makes a statement. And sometimes when a bill is entered in this body, it makes all of the newspapers in the world, such as happened to us yesterday. As a consequence, this makes many individuals reluctant to join a party, but that doesn't mean they're not well informed about the candidates, and they will follow those candidates to the general election, which I think is to the advantage of maybe either party, but by statistics, it would advantage the majority party. But regardless of party politics, I think primaries should be open to encourage the most competent candidates. It's in the tradition from the days that this country was founded. It's in the tradition of this state that I'm speaking of, an incident over 56 years ago. Please send this bill to the floor and let's allow 95 or 110 or if it's 200,000 people to participate in every election, because it's better that three persons who are not entitled to vote are permitted to vote rather than one is denied that to us sacred opportunity. And if we don't think it's sacred, turn on the television in any Mideast country save one.
Thank you. Is there any further proponent testimony?
Good morning. Thank you, committee members, for the opportunity to speak today on behalf of independent voters. My name is Kim Wright. I'm the founder and chair of South Dakota Voice of Independence, a grassroots group organized to give independent voters a voice in local, state, and national government. We applaud Senators Adelstein, Cutler, Holeen, and Letterman, and Representative Venner for their efforts to restore the democratic election process to our state. Currently, 87,000 registered voters are denied their right to participate in the election process. Senate Bill 175 will open primary elections to all voters, regardless of their political affiliation. In 1996, South Dakota passed House Bill 1014, giving political parties discretion to open their primary elections. The idea of this legislation was to encourage the participation of independent voters. According to the South Dakota Legislative Research Council issue memo 96-2, the election law reform gave the political parties the opportunity to reach out to non-affiliated voters in a new and significant way. It also encourages and facilitates the participation of non-affiliated voters in an important aspect of the election process. This memo goes on to suggest that including unaffiliated voters would contribute to a better voter turnout. Neither party responded to House Bill 1014 until 2009, when the State Democratic Committee voted to open their 2010 primary election. Actual participation, however, was limited by the minimal number of contested Democratic races in the primary. Our current primary election process allows the political parties to dictate to the government how the people's elections will be organized. This means that taxpaying citizens are required to gain permission from a private organization to participate in a public voting process funded by public tax dollars. Nationally, the percentage of voters who identify themselves as independent, 37 to 40%, exceeds those identified as either Republican or Democrat. Nearly 50% of younger voters, 18 to 29 years old, identify themselves as independent voters. These trends are evident in South Dakota as well. From 2008 to 2010, both the Democrat and Republican parties saw a decrease in their registered voter numbers. The number of voters registering independent, however, increased by 4.3% during that same time. Since 2006, the number of South Dakota voters registering as independent has increased by 16%. The nonpartisan trend continues across America. In his March 2010 comments, CBS anchor Bob Schieffer concludes that often those who vote in the primaries are the most partisan activists, the party's base, the most conservative Republicans, the most liberal Democrats. If Schieffer is correct, it seems likely then that the campaign messages are targeted to the most partisan of voters. Including independent voters in the target audiences would promote less partisan and more moderate campaigns. We choose to be independent voters not because we don't want to participate at all levels of the election process. South Dakota legislators are tasked with protecting the rights of landowners, homeowners, gun owners, business owners, and more. On behalf of independent voters, I urge you to defend all South Dakotans' right to vote. Thank you. I would also like to leave a copy of a petition that was signed by registered Democrats, Republicans, and Independents, an informal petition to support open primaries. Thank you.
Ms. Wright, thank you for your testimony. I have a question, though. The organization that you claim to represent, what was that again?
South Dakota Voice of Independence.
We do not have that as recorded in the approved state lobbyists.
Okay, we're not a lobbyist. We're just
okay,
a group.
But you're not registered.
Nope, we're not a lobbyist.
So the committee, you are instructed to consider her testimony solely as just an individual who wanted to speak her mind. So,
thank you.
Would you please hand it to a page and the page will hand it out. Thank you. With that said, any further proponent testimony for Senate Bill 175? Any further proponent testimony? For those in the committee, I do things like Senator Schleckaway does. I like taking proponent testimony, then opponent, and then allowing for questions. I feel it leads to a more lively debate. With that said, we will move to opponent testimony on Senate Bill 175. Any opponents to 175?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Good morning.
My name is Lucas Lynch. I'm the executive director with the South Dakota Republican Party. This morning, here to speak as an opponent to Senate Bill 175. it's important to keep in mind that our election process is available to all voters in South Dakota. The primary election serves a very clear purpose, and that's to allow the members of every political party to vet out their likely candidates that they would like to see run in a general election. And in South Dakota, all South Dakotans have the ability to register as a member of a party at least 15 days ahead of a primary election, or any election for that matter. The position of the South Dakota Republican Party is one that our state central committee has made the decision at this time to remain in a closed primary fashion, and that being so that we can properly go through the process of establishing our party platform and then having our candidates that we vet out in a primary process that will best represent our beliefs, our values, that of the South Dakota Republican Party. It is important as Americans and as South Dakotans, and as someone personally who has seen a third world country trying to identify and grasp their freedoms, I would share with you that in South Dakota we have unprecedented access to our elected officials and our candidates, and we do welcome. The South Dakota Republican Party welcomes with open arms any South Dakotan that would like to be part of the discussion in our primaries. And be more than happy to take any questions at later time.
Thank you, Mr. Lynch. Any further opponent testimony on Senate Bill 175?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I am a registered lobbyist. My name is Tanchi Weaver. I am Vice President of South Dakota Citizens for Liberty from Rapid City. And I would like to just make a few points this morning. Senator Adelstein made a reference to having vice president and president of different parties. I would like to point out that as a student of history, this was a situation that brought about the 12th Amendment in 1804. In the previous presidential election, there was a situation where the president and the vice president were of different parties, which resulted in the House of Representatives, a lame duck body at that time, choosing then the voting for the vice president. And you can check my facts on that, but I'm pretty sure I'm right about it. I think that no one is excluded from the election process in our state because people make choices, and choice is a very big buzzword in our country and in our time. They make a choice when they go to register as a voter. And they also make a commitment. You are all very familiar with the commitment of the people in the party. They all helped you get elected. And when people register as either a Republican or a Democrat, they are taking to heart a certain philosophy of government, and they are signing on and making a commitment to that. They are invested. If someone's not invested in the party, why would you let them make your decisions? It would be akin to letting your neighbor decide which car you buy because it suits his needs. And if this is a situation that's allowed where someone could register as an independent and vote in both a Democrat or Republican primary, why would you ever register as anything else when you can tinker with the politics of both parties? So I would say to you that no one is excluded. A primary is kind of an in-house decision. There is a point where someone who is not registered as a Republican or Democrat can make a decision, but they don't determine who is offered as a representative of those parties, because I think it's just wrong to let someone who doesn't commit to share the values of those parties to make those party decisions. And I have noticed that there is one party that tends not to have primaries, and this would probably increase that situation. But I think we're going to see with the rise of public awareness and a new surge of citizenship on the part of citizens in our state and all states, we're going to see a lot more primaries because, let's face it, our legislators are on probation. People put them into office and they have certain expectations, and there is an awareness now. It is my feeling and the feeling of our group that it's very clear what the parties stand for, and people have two opportunities to make those decisions. When they register, how they register is a decision, and when they go to the polls in a general election, no one is excluded. Thank you for your time. Good morning.
Thank you, Ms. Weaver. Any further opponent testimony on Senate Bill 175? Any further opponent testimony? With that said, we will close testimony and open the floor open for discussion and or action. Sorry. Mr. Adelson, Senator Adelson, sorry.
Well, I think those of all the times that a bill I've proposed has been opposed, I've never heard it better done. So I want to answer two questions, one from my good friend and supporter, Lucas Lynch. Indeed, there was a time when the parties required a lot of participation and support, and I remember it because the community, there was no internet, there was no interest in immediate cable TV, and we needed to be able to carry that party's, our party's message everywhere. And that mechanism gave rise to the closed primary because everyone didn't have the information, and we wanted those who could really understand the issues to be heard from. That's no longer true. I think that unfortunately, in my party, and I don't know about the Democratic Party, but those who involve themselves in the state affairs tend to be on, at least, and I'm thinking of some things even now, I guess in both parties, thinking of some things I've heard said, on the extremes, as was just proposed by Ms. Ames. The other issue is the one that you make a choice. You know, I think that that sort of choice is much more complex than it once was, and I don't think that we should require a person who sees some advantages in one party or in the other, or someone, quite frankly, as I think the majority of Americans are coming to recognize, that are toward the center, and we hope that continues in these new countries that are seeking freedom. I think this really ennobles our cause, and supports, as was said, there was a change, of course, in reluctantly, but the founders of the country really did not want to have party politics.
Thank you, Senator Adelstein. The chair misspoke earlier. We are open. We will close for testimony and open for questions. With that said, any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Teaser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question would be to anyone that's testified that can tell me what the status of primaries is around the country, the number of states that have open, closed primaries. Anybody have any information on that? I'd appreciate hearing it.
I do.
Please.
There are, at this time, and every state has different primary structures, but 33 states have some form of an open primary. And those states that border us, let me get my specifics, but I believe that we have Wyoming is a closed primary state, as is Nebraska. Open primary states are in Montana, North Dakota, Minnesota, and then, of course, Iowa has the open caucus. So our surrounding states, we have four of them that have open primaries.
Sorry, would you please identify yourself?
Oh, I'm Kim Wright.
Thank you. Any further questions from the committee? Hearing none, we will close the committee for questions and move on to discussion and or action. Any discussion from the committee? Must be an early Wednesday morning. Senator Bradford.
Well, being the only member on this committee who's been in both parties, I guess I could give a little. As you know, that we did pass a law that a party's it's a party's choice right now, and I for one have no fear of independent voters, and I wouldn't have had them when I was a Republican either. So I have a little heartburn. I'm for the bill, but I have a little heartburn when we have to pass a law to force somebody to open up their elections. That gives me a little heartburn. I feel bad that we have to go kind of to this point to get everybody to be able to participate. I think probably there's not much discussion that's either up or down or good. I think everybody's pretty much made their decision. I will make a motion to pass, and I probably won't get a second, but.
Motion is due pass from Senator Bradford, seconded by Senator Nelson. Would you like to speak to that motion, Senator Bradford?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hunhoff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, I'm going to ask the committee to oppose the due pass. You know, I think that it was articulated here by one of the speakers that we do have a process in place, and individuals have the opportunity, and choice is the answer to the question. If they so choose to register at a party that is not the two primary parties, that is absolutely fine. They've made that decision. But to allow them the opportunity to participate in a primary of either party, then, to me, is that they haven't made the choice. They want to play the game, and they want to be able to do what they want. Now, if they want to do that, sign up on one or the other, or remain as an independent, and you can vote in the general election. But I think it brings undue influence, and it's also how fair is it to the candidates who's out there, because you're working in the primary, you're focusing on what your party platform is and what you're doing with that, and then you have the outside of influence of other people that aren't willing to make that choice or that commitment. And for that reason, I think we have a process in place that is working, and I would ask you to oppose the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Hunhoff. Senator Teason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, as usual, Senator Bradford has me pegged as one of those for that. For me, this is a tough decision. This is one of these 51-49 deals for me. I do understand the position of the party. I think that there's merit in the argument that a party has a platform, and it's an organization that, you know, builds that platform and has a right to put forward candidates that coincide with that platform. That makes sense to me. Unlike Senator Adelstein, I come from a long history of sort of not being involved in partisan politics in my previous career. I kind of kept that at arm's length, so I don't have that long association with the party that many other people do. I look at the other states that have various forms of open primaries, and I wasn't sure how many it was, but apparently a majority of the states do. I don't know that I see preponderance of harmful effects from those open primaries. And I guess based my 51-49 could change at some point, you know, maybe based on how many independent voters there are. But as it stands today, I see less harm in allowing independent voters to vote in primaries than I do damage to the parties and their platform. So at this point, I'm going to support the motion on the floor. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any further discussion from the committee? That said, we'll close discussion and vote on the action do pass on Senate Bill 175. Moved by Senator Bradford, seconded by Senator Nelson. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Bradford.
Aye.
Unhoff.
No.
Biederman excused. Nelson.
Aye.
Teason.
Aye.
Olean.
No.
We have three ayes, two nays, and two excused.
We have three votes for, two votes against, but according to parliamentary rules, we need four votes in order to for a final disposition. Chair will ask for latitude while I discuss with my parliamentary expert to see what needs to be done. The chair has learned that we can be open for other motions, and if we do not hear another motion, we will send it to the floor without recommendation.
That is a motion in itself.
Okay. Or then the chair will entertain a motion to send it to the floor without recommendation.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Nelson?
I so move we send 175 to the floor without recommendation.
Second.
The motion on the floor is to send Senate Bill 175 to the Senate floor without recommendation, forwarded by Senator Nelson, seconded by Senator Bradford. Senator Nelson, would you like to speak to that?
I'll just reiterate a little bit what Senator Teason said. This is, I don't have a strong passion either way on this particular issue, and it has a very, very difficult fight in this building, regardless of what our action is. But I think that the floor debate is worthy, and it should at least make it to the floor again without a recommendation of this committee. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion on that? With that said, Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Bradford?
Aye.
Unhoff?
No.
Biederman excused. Nelson?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Olean?
Aye.
One, two, three, four ayes, one nay, one nay.
Having received four votes for, one vote against, Senate Bill 175 will move to the floor without recommendation, which I feel is probably a pretty good disposition for it. As one of the persons who signed on for it, I wanted to just open it up for discussion. I'm actually not in favor of the bill, and but I feel that it was worthy of discussion, and this is probably the way to do it, is to not come down one way or another on it. With that said, action on Senate Bill 175 is closed. We'll move on to House Bill 1044. An act to revise certain water project district voter eligibility provisions. Proponent testimony on House Bill 1044? Representative Hunstead, or Senator Hunstead, sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am glad to be here. Mr. Tom Jones, who is the House prime on this, and it's from his district, is next door in committee hearing. If I could get you to send someone over to bring him in.
Senator Hunstead, what was the name again?
Representative Tom Jones. He was here just a moment ago. He went back to vote on a hearing right in, I believe, in this meeting room next door. Anyway, thank you, and I will. This is Senator Jim Hunstead. I represent District 2. I am interested in this bill, and it does something really very simple. We have a water district that requires the members to live in the district. This particular water district is a flood water district, and consequently you can't live in it. It floods. So today no one can vote in this election because you can't live in it, and this law proposes to change that. And I would, as soon as Mr. Jones is here, since it's in his district, I will have him tell you specifically what he's trying to do, and we'll move from there. I'd be glad to answer any questions at this point to take up this little bit of time. I thought I was going to get him. Here he is.
Thank you, Senator.
Tom Jones.
Any further proponent testimony on House Bill 1044?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of this committee, I'm Representative Tom Jones from District 17, which is Clay and Turner Counties. I'm here to address you this morning about House Bill 1044. It amends an existing water district law. First, I'd like to give you a short explanation of what a floodplain is. Floodplain basically is a narrow piece of land that affects counties that have a river running through it. What we want to adjust in this law right now is it states currently that in order to be an eligible voter in this floodplain district, you must meet three requirements. First, you must be a registered voter of the district. You have to own land in this floodplain district. And the third one is that you must live in the floodplain district. And what House Bill 1044 would like to do is the first requirement would stay the same, be a registered voter in the district. The second would be the same also, be a landowner in this floodplain district. But the third one, we would delete the fact that you must live in this district. The reason why we'd like to delete that is for obvious reason, few people live in this floodplain anymore. We have no voters. The second area that needs to be changed in this law is the language that states that if land within the floodplain floodplain is sold on a contract for deed, both the purchaser and the seller are entitled to a vote. This bill changes the wording so that the purchaser of the land is entitled to the vote. I visited with the attorney Noden Isik from the DENR. He has reviewed these changes and approved them. House Bill 1044 did pass out of the committee with no dissenting votes. It passed through the House 70-0. And I do urge you to vote yes on House Bill 1044, and I stand by to answer your questions. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative. Are there any further proponent testimony on House Bill 1044? Any further proponent testimony? Hearing none, we will move to opponent testimony. Are there any opponents to House Bill 1044? Any opponent testimony? With that said, we'll close testimony and move to committee questions.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hunhoff.
Thank you. I have a question for Representative Jones. Hypothetical. I live in Yankton County. I'm a registered voter. No, let's say I live in Tabor. I'm in BY Water District, so I live there. But I own property in this floodplain. This would not allow me to, I pay taxes on that property, but this would not allow me to vote on that property then. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct. Mr. Chairman, no, that's not correct. You would be allowed to vote. And that's why we have struck in the third one is that you had to live in that district. And that's the one we want to strike from this bill.
Just to follow up. In your beginning comments or your description, you said you had to meet three criteria. So you're saying you don't have to meet the three criteria. You need to meet only one?
Mr. Chairman, the third, the law as it says now that you do have to live in the floodplain district. And what we're proposing with this amendment to this law is that we do get away or do away with that law. That third requirement. You do not have to live in the district.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions from the committee? Hearing none, we will close the hearing for questions and move on to discussion and or action.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Teason.
Move do pass on House Bill 1044.
The motion is do pass, forwarded by Senator Teason, seconded by Senator Bradford. Any discussion on that, Senator Teason?
Well, the logic of not requiring somebody to live in a floodplain, as well as the 70-0 wisdom of the House, indicates to me that this is probably a good bill.
Any further discussion on the do pass motion? Hearing none, we will close testimony on that, and the Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Bradford?
Aye.
Hunhoff?
Aye.
Lederman? Excused. Nelson?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Holeen?
Aye.
Schleckaway excused. There were five ayes, two excused.
Having received a unanimous 5-0 vote, House Bill 1044 passes Senate Local Government Committee, and we'll move on to the Senate floor.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Teason. Senator Teason moves consent.
Second.
Seconded by Senator Hunhoff. Any discussion on that? Hearing none, the motion is consent by Senator Teason, seconded by Senator Hunhoff. Secretary will call the roll. Oh, it's a voice vote. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. House Bill 1044 will be placed on the consent calendar. Now the chair is going to pass the gavel to Senator Teason, and we'll move on to House. We are deferring House Bill 1051. We are moving to House Bill 1057, and we'll pass the gavel down to Senator Teason.
Mr. Chair, we overlooked our pages. I think we should introduce our pages. Maybe while we have
the acting chair will accomplish that task while the new proponent is going to move to his position. Welcome, Pages. Come and tell us who you are and what you may be doing in the next year or two. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Ashley Jade Higdon, and I plan to go to Black Hills State University and major in English.
Thank you.
My name is Christina Dre. I am from Burke High School, and I plan on going to USD for education and journalism.
Good. Thank you for your assistance. Thank you, Senator Bradford. Next bill up for consideration is House Bill 1057, an act to repeal the provision that requires the county auditor to assist in locating unregistered mobile homes. Senator Holeen, good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for taking over the chair for me today. And House Bill 1057 passed unanimously out of the House. It's basically a cleanup bill brought by the Association of County Officials. I'm Senator Reed Holeen. I represent District 5, which is Watertown. And House Bill 1057 was brought to me by the Association of County Officials. It's basically a cleanup bill to help the county auditor. It repeals the current law that forces the county auditor to basically go out searching the country for unregistered mobile homes. County auditors are very busy people, and to picture them driving around the countryside in a car looking for mobile homes that may or may not be registered and then going up to verify that would be a tremendous strain on their time. That law was implemented back in 1961 and last addressed almost 23 years ago. The modern county auditors simply just do not have the time to assist in the location, and it is an unreasonable use of their time and money to require that. And we still have those safeguards in place. Other people do go out and find those unregistered mobile homes, so that's still there. And House Bill 1057 basically helps just to match the law with the realities of the 21st century. With that said, I know that there are other people who would like to speak on House Bill 1057, and I will sit down and wait for questions.
Thank you. Other proponents for House Bill 1057? Proponents. Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Andrew Petrus. I'm with the South Dakota Association of County Officials. The only thing that I can add to that discussion, or what Senator Holeen already said, was that our association members found this law in the books, weren't currently following it, and brought it forward for us to clean up because And there you go.
Thank you. Other proponents for House Bill 1057? Other proponents? Seeing none, are there opponents to House Bill 1057? Are there opponents? Seeing none, we'll close the public testimony and open it to the committee for questions. Any questions from the committee? Seeing none, we'll move on to discussion and or action from the committee. Senator Bradford.
Second.
Motion by Senator Bradford do pass. Second by Senator Holeen. Any discussion? Seeing none, the motion on the floor is do pass House Bill 1057. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Bradford?
Aye.
Hunhoff?
Aye.
Lederman excused. Nelson?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Holeen?
Aye.
Schleckaway excused. There were five ayes, two excused.
Motion carries. Do pass.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Holeen.
I move consent.
Motion by Senator Holeen, second by Senator Bradford, consent. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? 1057 will go to the floor on consent. Next bill on the agenda is House Bill 1096, an act to repeal certain provisions relating to the appointment of municipal officers. Senator Holeen again.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Senator Reed Holeen, representing District 5, which is Watertown. And House Bill 1096 was brought to me by certain parties who know more about it and more passionate about it than I am. So I will just pass the floor on to them.
Thank you. We'll take other passionate and knowledgeable proponent testimony. Good morning.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Monte Lee from South Dakota Municipal League. I'm not sure this is a bill that will inspire much passion on anyone's behalf.
I was going to say it's not 9 o'clock in the morning yet, and if you think this is going to be passion, I need to get prepared. So go ahead.
Thank you. What this bill is doing is frankly purely cleanup. We have found that the two statutes that are listed, that you can see them before you in the bill, conflict. And they conflict if you are operating under the aldermanic form of government. You will see that the passage or the section that we are asking you to delete says that you name your officers that you're going to appoint. You provide for that by ordinance. And then they are appointed by the governing body. If you go to 914.3, you will see that everybody's appointed by the governing body except if you are governed by the mayor and common council, which is our aldermanic form of government, then you are appointed by the mayor with the approval of the council. And those two obviously don't mesh very well. And so we have moved the portion of 914.1 that deals with providing for your appointed officials by ordinance up into 914.3, and then we ask you to just delete the language that conflicts. I'd be happy to stand by for any questions, but I will be eagerly awaiting any other further passionate testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Other proponents for House Bill 1096? Other proponents? Seeing none, are there opponents to House Bill 1096? Opponents? Seeing no opponents, we'll close public testimony and open for questions from the committee. Are there any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nelson.
A question for Ms. Taylor.
Go ahead.
And I have no opposition to this bill, passionate or otherwise, but I do have a question. This is just the single form of government. Is there other conflicts in the law for commission form of governments or city managers?
Chairman.
Go ahead.
No, because of the wording in 914.3, if you go on, you will see that in other municipalities, they are appointed by a majority vote of the members elect to the governing body. And so that covers trustee, commissioner. The statutes for city manager spell out how those things take place, and they are different. But we believe this is the only conflict in this particular area.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, we'll move to discussion and action from the committee. House Bill 1096.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Hunoff?
I move to pass House Bill 1096.
Motion for due pass. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Senator Bradford. Discussion on that motion? Seeing no discussion, the question on the floor is due pass for House Bill 1096. Those in favor will say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Bradford?
Aye.
Hunhoff?
Aye.
Lederman excused. Nelson?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Hullane?
Aye.
Shalekaway excused. There were five ayes, two excused.
Due pass motion passes.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Hullane.
I move consent.
Motion for consent. Is there a second? Second from Senator Bradford. Any discussion on that motion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye. Aye. Those opposed? House Bill 1096 will go to the floor on consent. Next bill up is House Bill 1118, and I'll return the gavel to the Vice Chair.
Thank you for stepping in for me, Senator Teason. Next up on our slate is House Bill 1118, an act to revise certain provisions concerning the extraterritorial jurisdiction of a municipality. With that said, we will open House Bill 1118 for proponent testimony.
Morning, Senator. I'm Representative Mark Kirkby from Rapid City. I appreciate the time of the committee this morning. You are blessed that I left my file downstairs, so I don't have that 8-minute prepared speech for you. But specifically, this bill, it addresses, and it's kind of that awkward title, but I believe just in current statute, the reflecting back on what was changed years ago, specifically is addressing municipalities, and this is one statute change we are asking for your concurrence in on that second page on line one, just specifically removing that specific reference to first or second class and just referring it. It makes our current statutes regarding this type of issue more consistent with what is in statute right now. And Mr. Chairman, I can assure you there is an additional proponent that can really shed some light, and I can assure you offer some more concrete testimony to that, but I certainly would stand by for any questions you might have. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative. I think we have the passionate Ms. Taylor here to speak to us again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Yvonne Taylor with the South Dakota Municipal League. This is a process that we call internally tidying up the code. And I am very familiar with what happened. In 1992, this is the very first bill I ever lobbied all by myself. And we went through and had city and town change to municipality. And where the code said city, they changed it to first and second class. And where the code had said town, they changed it to third class. Where there wasn't a distinction, they just put in municipality. That has led to some cases where a distinction was made where none was intended. And this is one of those sections of the code. This deals with what happens when two cities run into each other. And you meet at a point equidistant, and you've each got your own authority up to that point. And we feel that third-class cities should have that same type of protection as the first two. And so it really was, I think, simply an oversight when that change went through in 1992. And so we would ask for your favorable consideration of fixing it. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any further proponents to testify on House Bill 1118? Hearing none, we will open it up for opponent testimony on House Bill 1118. Any opponents? Hearing none, we'll close the hearing to testimony and move on to questions. Any questions from the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Nelson.
I have a question for Ms. Taylor. or perhaps an observation. Again, it's simply because I'm somewhat acutely in tune to some of this stuff, but in the bill it addresses city council of a municipality. There are other forms of government. Should that be governing board?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think that would do any harm. I would have to go look and see if there are definitions in Title 11 that specifically say that city council means everybody or not.
Yeah, I have no opposition to the bill.
It's certainly meant to
be everybody.
Refer to everybody. But whether or not that by definition is the way that happens, I don't know.
I'm not going to propose amendment at this time. If you could look into that for me, and I will certainly do it on the floor. But at this time, thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Teason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yvonne, can you give us a real life or a scenario where this clash takes place and how this revision changes, how that gets what the resolution to that is?
Thank you. I think probably the place you would be most likely to see this, and I know there are cases out in the West River or Black Hills too, but when you look at a place like Sioux Falls and in the East River where you have a lot of towns, a place that's growing as much as Sioux Falls is growing could easily run into a third-class town, and that third-class town should be able to have the same protection and the same rights, essentially, as Sioux Falls, not to be absorbed, but instead to meet at that point equidistant and retain their own ability to control their own boundaries.
Follow-up? All right. Help me out on this. So what happens where they're already closer than that, and that so that jurisdiction will now change, the smaller municipality will now share that jurisdiction with the bigger city, which
Mr. Chairman,
thank you.
I don't believe that would be the case. I don't believe we can pass retroactive legislation, and I think that at the point that this would go into effect on July 1st. Whatever boundaries are there would be there, and then from that point on it would go forward. But I don't believe we could undo anything that's been done.
Any further questions? Hearing none, we will close the hearing for questions and move on to committee discussion and or action.
Sure.
Senator Nelson. The motion is due pass, forwarded by Senator Nelson. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Senator Hunhoff. With that, the motion is due pass, forwarded by Senator Nelson. Senator, would you like to speak to that motion?
No, thank you.
Hearing none, the motion is due pass, forwarded by Senator Nelson, seconded by Senator Hunhoff. Secretary will call the roll.
Senator Bradford?
Aye.
Hunhoff?
Aye.
Nelson?
Aye.
Teason?
Aye.
Holane?
Aye.
Schlackaway excused. There was 5 yeas and 2 excused.
Having received a majority vote, House Bill 1118 will pass committee and move to the Senate floor. At this time, the chair would like to entertain a motion to amend the title of House Bill 1118 to delete A or change municipalities to municipality. I would think it would probably be better just to delete A in the title because there's a grammatical error there, and we might as well clean it up here in committee before it gets to the Senate. Senator Teason?
I would move that title amendment to remove the A from the title.
The motion is an amendment to change the title of House Bill 1118 to an act to revise certain provisions concerning the extraterritorial jurisdiction of municipalities.
That would be the A on line 2 to
clarify. The amendment would be to strike the A on line 2 of the title. Do I hear a second? Seconded by Senator Bradford. Any further discussion on that, Senator Teason?
No.
Hearing none, is that a voice? All those in favor of amending House Bill 1118, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. With that, the amendment passes, and House Bill 1118 will move to the Senate floor. Well, committee, House Bill 1119 has been deferred to next Wednesday. We thank you for your indulgence and for your good work. We got through a lot of work today. Please leave your binders for the pages to fill in for next week. And with that, the chair will entertain a motion to Senator Teason.
You're quite sure there's no out-of-town testimony?
Yes. Is there any out-of-town testimony on House Bill 1119? Sorry.
I might be in on Wednesday, but I might not.
So,
I did talk with them. Sorry. I may be able to. I don't know.
Would you like to get your testimony?
What do you think?
Feel bad. Unless we can repeat it when the other two ever gone. That's why now they're not going to hear. Strictly up to you.
For everyone listening in the... For everyone listening over the internet, we are trying to accommodate someone who would like to testify on House Bill 1119 who came from out of town, and we are just trying to make sure that we can or cannot rearrange that testimony to another day. The chair will ask for a motion of a short recess while we can figure this out. Okay. The chair will say stand at ease while we try to figure this out. Thank you.
I didn't know that.
The chair thanks everyone for that indulgence to figure it out. We just wanted to make sure that we had a very fair hearing on this bill, both for proponents and opponents, and we wanted to make sure that the process would go through as it is intended to give it the fairest hearing we could. With that said, it has been decided that we are going to defer House Bill 1119 to next Wednesday. And with that, we are done for our business for today, so the chair will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
So moved by Senator Teason.
Second.
Seconded by Senator Hunhoff. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carries.